Go to Matthew 10:33. Well, actually, verse 10:24. The disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his lord. It is enough for the disciple that he be as his master, and the servant as his lord. They've called the master of the house Beelzebub. How much more shall they call them of his household? Fear them not, therefore, for there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hid that shall not be known. What I tell you in darkness, that speak you in light. What you hear in the ear, preach ye upon the housetops. And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall on the ground without your father, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. And that section is specific about what we're going to study next, where Jesus was unclean. It's when he touched a leper. But fear ye not, therefore, you have more value than many sparrows. Whosoever therefore shall confess me before men, him will I confess also before my Father which is in heaven. But whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven. In verse 33, the word deny there is to damn. There's a dam that you build over the years and over time. And behind that dam, there's a bunch of dead elephants and dead cows, and there has to be a time when this process begins where everything comes out. So there is, so the prophecy becomes free and open. Because if you deny him, you build the dam, and he will deny you before his Father which is in heaven. And so it's vital for a time that each person goes through. It's the childlike thing, but they just let out, just let it flow, whatever's there. And they'll find in the mystery that as they do that, the things that they thought they were holding in because they would hurt somebody or hurt themselves, and if you can ignore them, then they'll stop having power with him. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
So, and then after, you know, as you walk in the walk, then I mean, if anything doesn't stick to you, it isn't even in your consciousness.
The reason why I was asking is because he said everything that comes, if I say everything that comes out of my mouth, then it's just going to be, he said, I'll just murder everybody. If I have to come back and...
Well, he's doing it. What he has to see is he's doing it anyway. He's murdering everybody anyway because the thoughts are spiritual.
And that's why I said he didn't deserve to live.
Wow.
That part doesn't.
That's why he has to abandon that. That's why that part, that him, has to go to the cross. And that's what he's never seen yet. He's always tried to get it right. And you know that.
Yeah.
Anybody else? We're studying where Jesus was unclean. And to make it very personal, we're studying where Jesus was in spiritually the exact condition that is. It doesn't make not part of the body, it doesn't make him are you crying?
Mm-hmm.
It just simply says that there's been somebody that you've touched a dead body, or there's leprosy, or something has transpired where you're Levitically unclean, and it's something of the law. It's not what you think or not think is unclean. It doesn't matter what you think. It's what the law says. So we saw that he was unclean before he was circumcised, and then we saw last Thursday night that he was unclean in Samaria. And that was a pretty wild time. If you weren't here, I'd highly recommend you listen to the tape. The next time he was unclean is when he touched the leper. So let's go to Luke 5, verse 13. Verse 12, and it came to pass when he was in a certain city, behold, a man full of leprosy, who seeing Jesus fell on his face and besought him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou can make me clean. He put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. Immediately the leprosy departed from him. Now, you remember now, according to the law, the only way the leprosy departed from him is if he was seen as leprous from the top of his head to his bottom of his feet. You understand that? So then he said, he charged him to tell no man, but to go and show thyself to the priest and offer for thy cleansing according as Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. Now, what it doesn't say, because the people that write this, that wrote this Bible, assumed that you would know it, is that Jesus also had to go. Once he touched the leper, he was unclean until evening, and then he was unclean forever unless he went through the washing process. You understand that? So Jesus was in a state of Levitically unclean. The moment he touched the leper, he couldn't partake of the offerings, he couldn't partake of the fellowship, he couldn't partake of the sacrifices. Is that sunk in?
Are we talking about literally touching?
That's what it says. That he, Jesus, put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will. Jesus put forth his hand and touched the leper. So that made him Levitically unclean. Because in this context, what leprosy is walking death. It's internalizing, and all the crap that's supposed to be coming out so that the bride, so that the wine would be perfected, and that all that this is a rotten grape with the prophesying internally, and the covering of the grape is so strong that, and see, the sad part is that when you're going through that, you think you're being weak. You understand? But it's really you're being strong. Everybody understand that? It takes strength to stop from being. It takes judgment. You have to elevate yourself and make a decision that you are not going to say this or that. That's a position of strength. The position of weakness or position of humility is to simply say what's there without regard to the consequences. Okay, so now we've seen him unclean in three places. Let's see if we can find another one. Go to Luke 7. Verse 11. 7:11. 7:11. And it came to pass. Remember how many times I've come in? What does it mean when you see it came to pass?
Very good.
It means really important.
Pay attention.
Pay attention. Get out of your normal state of sloth. Concentrate. Focus. Pay attention.
Post at your work.
What verse are we on?
I hear a voice in the
pull your head out.
Luke 7, verse 11. And it came to pass the day after that he went into a city called Nain, and many of the disciples went with him, and much people. You know, I've never before read that. I can never remember ever reading that verse before. I never heard of Nain. If somebody, I would have bet a lot of money at the word that the town of Nain was not in the Bible. Missed your chance. And it came to pass in Nain. Now when he came nigh to the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, the only son of his mother. She was a widow, and much of the people of the city was with her. And the Lord saw her, and he had compassion on her, and said unto her, weep not. And he came and touched the bier. And they that were And they that bare him stood still, and he said, Young man, I say unto thee, arise.
It's a bier.
It's the funeral bier. That's what they carry. It's the platform on which they carry the dead body. And he that was dead sat up and began to speak. And he that was dead sat up and began to speak, and he delivered him to his mother. And there came a fear on all. I mean, I just felt that. But isn't that what he's done to each one of us? He's come and touched the bier and said, arise and walk. We were walking dead men.
Literally, in some cases.
And there came a fear on all, and they glorified God, saying that a great prophet has risen up among us, and that God hath visited his people. And this rumor of him went forth throughout all Judea and throughout all the region round about. And the disciples of John showed him all of these things. I can't get that out of my mind. There's another place where he raised the young daughter of Jairus. Somebody find that. Do you have your super duper Bible? Okay, let me ask you a question. All right? This is like cutting down to the short hair. Do you believe that happened? Who here does not believe that incident we just read about happened?
Well, the first thing in my mind is maybe, you know, somebody just really wasn't dead. Everybody just thought he was.
A little CPR thing.
Yeah, CPR, like, passed over and came back.
I didn't hear what you said.
Does anybody here not believe that he raised that person from the dead?
You know, I was struck by both of those statements was the simplicity of it. And we deny the simplicity of it. We want to make it, it's got to be meaningful, it's got to be, you know, there's got to be a burning bush, you know, something going on other than just the
young man, arise.
Yeah. And there's no incantations, there's no mumbo jumbo, there's no, you know, just that simple.
Let's go to Luke 8, verse 49. While he yet spake, there cometh one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, Thy daughter is dead, trouble not the master. When Jesus heard it, he answered him, saying, Fear not, believe only, and she shall be made whole. When he came into the house, he suffered no man to go in, save Peter and James and John, and the father and the mother of the maiden. And all wept and bewailed her, which he said, Weep not, she is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn, knowing that she was dead. And he put them all out, and took her by the hand, and called, saying, Maid, arise. And her spirit came again, and she rose straight away, and he commanded to give her food. And her parents were astonished. But he charged them that they should tell no man what was done.
Astonished. Break
down. Well, why did he not want to tell them?
Because, I mean, he didn't raise the dead. I mean, if Jesus wanted to raise the dead, we'd have a population explosion. Jesus raised the dead because he had, in order for a testing to occur, a temptation to really occur, you have to know, a testing is, how can I say it? Testing is the, you have to know that you have the thing before it can be tested. I mean, you can't. It's some alien power trying to. If he didn't know that he could raise people from the dead, then there would be no test. He wouldn't have known who he was. But he didn't. His purpose in life wasn't to raise people from the dead.
Is it like we had to name it?
Well, yeah, but it's more than that because I don't know how to say this. He had to know that he possessed that before that he could be tested in it.
Well, isn't it kind of like, I mean, he probably could have raised himself from the dead, but he waited for God to. But he had to know, I mean, in order to empty himself of that, he had to know that that was he could do that.
Well, remember it says that if everything that he did was written out, that the world could not hold the books. The world, the religion has taught us that he went through all this and he died for you. And the gospel is the good news to you that we miss the mystery if we concentrate on that, because he died for the Father. And it's good news to the Father. And so, in the process of everything that Christ had to know to let go of, he had to know a million things that aren't written in here, that aren't necessarily a part of this. He had to know what it was that he possessed before he could empty himself of it. In order that otherwise it would be just some ignoramus running around emptying himself.
It'd be a show of love towards the Father.
Right. It'd be like it'd be some imbecile saying he's given up the world. You know what I mean? It's but you need to see and apprehend that here's the mother, he'll now be. You need to apprehend that there's a million things that he had to see that he possessed that aren't written in here, so that he could empty himself of it. You understand that? All right.
I was. You said, do you believe it? And since you said that, I've been like in trouble or something. It's like I've been sitting here.
Go ahead, what?
Since you asked, do you believe that he raised this guy from the dead? I've been sort of going, do I believe this, and listening to what you're saying. And I just came to the point where I realized I do believe that he did that. The thing I have trouble believing, I mean, I know it's true, but the thing I have trouble believing is that he stopped doing it. That he was able to, you know, to walk past a situation, you know, I mean, this is, they're bringing the guy out of the gate of the city for his funeral, right? And he had compassion. And in this instance, he did something about it because the woman was a widow, it was her only son, blah, blah, blah. But there were countless millions of times that he saw and touched and knew that somebody was in absolute agony or mourning or whatever, and he was able to not do anything. And to me, that's the amazing thing. Not that he raised somebody from the dead, that's pretty amazing. But the fact that he didn't go with that. He didn't make that a thing. He didn't make that his work. That isn't what he did. He didn't spend the next 75 years raising people from the dead, or healing sick people, or cleansing lepers. It isn't what he was about.
That's right. It was about his Father's business.
Yeah. And that, to me, if he'd done that, he would have been, I don't know what he would have been, but he wouldn't have been
sideshow.
No, he would have been what you want him to be.
Yeah, he would have been Barney.
No, he would have been what each one of us want him to be.
It's like, you know, I mean, Satan took him right after, you know, Satan took him up on the temple and tempted him with all that stuff, and he turned it down, but that wasn't the end of it. I mean, every time he saw somebody suffering, which had to be 1,000 times a day,
but it's not.
He was given the same temptation.
But hear me, you got to hear this. It's not just then, it's now. Mm-hmm. Every time he sees somebody suffering now, every time he sees somebody die now. Do you understand that?
That's a belief problem, is that you believe it happened then, but you don't believe that he's here now.
Right.
That he's forsaking you, or that
he hasn't. Yeah, and it's in this context, it's, name me one thing that's troubling you tonight. Your God would solve that. A God that you would like. You know, I'm serious. If the God that this mind wants is there'd be a different woman every night. There would be, I mean, it would be all kinds of
stuff, it would be, he would make fornication not sinning.
Daily prerequisite.
We're making a daily prerequisite. Daily.
A morning prerequisite.
But it's like, whatever it is, and there would be no pain, obviously. I can't say pain. And I'd have him snap his fingers and make me good looking. But I know all that. I know the stupidity of all that. But we can't possibly begin to understand the power and the authority that Jesus Christ emptied himself of. That's what's so piddlingly stupid about the Tiltons of the world, you know. He's trying to use sorcery. We heard this tape this morning. I mean, I happen to know what happened in Tulsa. They had a status conference in the ABC lawsuit. And so Tilton gets up there today and he says, "Praise God, I got the victory in Tulsa." Well, he didn't get, I mean, he got wiped out. But he's using sorcery to try to make himself believe, and it was, I mean, and it trivializes what the majesty of Christ is. I mean, he just trivializes suffering.
Yeah, I just realized something. This stuff, Christ is sitting in heaven at rest, right? He's sitting at the right hand of the Father. His enemies are under his feet. And these little puppets are jumping around trying to do incantations to make him violate that, to cause him to stand up and exert himself. They're tempting the Son of God.
No, they're not. I mean, no more than a...
Well, I realize it's a joke.
Yeah, no more than a character.
But that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get
His attention.
Christ to deny.
Well, we did the same thing.
A gnat on the red heifer's ass.
Okay. So anyway, I don't want to get into that. We now see that we know about these two that we just read about, and we know about Lazarus, and we know about himself, that he touched the dead body at least four times on those occasions, right? We know that he was unclean, big time, when he touched these dead bodies. He couldn't fellowship, he couldn't do anything. He had to go before the priest and have the most important person in the temple come and sprinkle him with a hyssop and some ashes before he could even fellowship or partake of the offerings and do anything. To me, this is awesome. This is the definition of humility. But that's why we have to apprehend this leprosy, this touching the dead body, these other aspects, so we can apprehend the waters of cleansing instead of acting like nothing happened. Between now and the next couple weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, I want each of you to make a list of where you touch the dead body. What happens? What's the criteria for causing you to touch the dead body? Again, do you understand? You are dead. And you touch it internally when you go in and start, I think I'll do this and that and this. Anyway.
When he went to this little guy and had him sprinkle him, is that the same as going to John the Baptist and having the Baptist baptize him?
No, because that was a big dude.
But I mean, is it the same thing? Is it?
No, it's totally different. I'm going to get into that. Mark 5. Mark 5, verse 21. "And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus." That's why I couldn't spell it, because I couldn't pronounce it. "Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. A certain woman, which had..." And this was... So this is happening in the same... He's going to be doubly unclean here in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
A certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing better, but rather grew worse, when she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind him and touched his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, who touched me? I love these disciples.
Greatly
much.
It says
virtue.
Does it mean power?
No, it means virtue.
What is that? How does virtue go out of you?
Well, when the unclean thing touched him.
Doesn't that also show us that you know it? I mean, even though you know it the instant it happens.
Who touched my clothes? Anyway. Verse 32, and he looked round about to see her that had done the thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, daughter, thy faith had made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. And while he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue. He said, he's already unclean now, right? So the ruler of the synagogue didn't know that this transaction happened. While he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? And as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered no man to follow him, save Peter and James and John and the brother of James. And John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when he was come in, he said unto them, why ye do this? Why make ye this ado, and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, and entereth in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and said unto her, Talitha kumi. Which is being interpreted, damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of age 12 years, and they were astonished with great astonishment. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat.
I have a question. How could he heal her if he was unclean? If he became unclean when the woman touched?
Because I mean, it didn't affect his power. The point of it is, remember what I said to you earlier, that it isn't the dead which makes you unclean, and it isn't the ashes which purifies you. Those are only symbols. Those are only types that were there, as we've all seen 100,000 times.
Somebody else who had been touched by that woman. We'd go, oh, I'm unclean, I'm unclean, I'm unclean. He knew who he was. So it didn't affect.
Well, he would, but he was still.
He still had to obey the law, but it didn't affect.
No, but my point to you is still, now he touched a woman with an issue, which also is against, causes him to be unclean. That just took running water. He touched the dead now, which made him doubly unclean. Now he needed to have the ashes of the red heifer applied.
The act of him becoming unclean, he had to do that. He had, by taking that on and giving it back up to the Father, I mean, that's part of the process he had to do.
Right.
He didn't have to be, so you have to be actually declared each time to be unclean and then go through the purification. When you already know, you can just go through straight into the purification.
You can redeem the time. All right, you understand that in all those occasions that Christ was unclean. He didn't sin, but something, some transaction had to take place in order that fellowship could be restored, in order that the offerings could be, he could partake of, in order that really there would be the whole mystery of community could be reestablished. It's a big deal to understand this, because the rest of the world thinks that to be unclean is to sin. They don't realize that Christ was unclean on several occasions. So is that firmly implanted in your somewhere? All right. Well, let's see if we can begin to study the red heifer then. Do you understand that there are many, many things that caused uncleanness? There was the issues of touching, if you had a running sore, or if you were regular menstrual cycle of a woman, childbirth. But then there are many, many that go by degrees into more and more. Running water dealt with most of them. Some of them you needed the dirt from, or ashes from the temple. In a rare occasion, you needed gold mixed with the running water. Sometimes you needed the blood from the bird, from the sparrows. But the greatest, the most precious of all, the thing that caused the greatest defilement was touching the dead body, and therefore you needed the most precious, the most expensive, the rarest thing in the universe to add to the water to cleanse that defilement of touching the dead body. Now, you have to see this, that Christ is the reason that the red heifer exists, but Christ wasn't the sacrifice of the red heifer. The red heifer is us. And it could only be one that has never had anything put on. You know, we've never had a job, so to speak, spiritually. We don't think, you know, there's never a yoke been put on, never even a napkin. But everything is burned, the ashes, the blood, and so as we give all that we have, whatever we have, into the fire that's here, then that presents our body the living sacrifice from which the ashes of the red heifer come forth, that we may be cleansed individually when we touch the dead body. This is a great mystery. You have to understand the preciousness of it. From God's eyes, in the natural, there were only 7 red heifers in all of history. It was the rarest, most expensive animal in the history of the universe. There's no way that you could apply or to comprehend how much money one of those things was worth, because the whole nation of Israel couldn't continue without it.
So it's as rare as it is that a person hears.
That's right. And it's as rare as it is that there is a body of people that would see this. You understand? A little bit? So the rarity of it, the huge defilement that comes about by touching the dead, can only be taken care of by something that is that rare and that precious and that expensive, which is us, which is the mystery. That's why this can only be understood in the context of community, in the context of the body. It can't be a big, huge church. The heifer has to be only applied in that 10 to 20. I mean, that's all it can be. You can't go apply this stuff in the big group. It doesn't work. Now, don't try to go explaining this to somebody.
Not really.
Right.
So every 10 to 20 had to have their own heifer.
Well, no, they are the heifer.
I'm with you.
It's a good thing that was an important point.
I was going
to say. All right.
I didn't think that sounded right.
Defilement by the dead was symbolically treated as the greatest defilement of all. If not removed, if it wasn't removed from Christ, it would separate eternally. It lasted 7 days. Christ was unclean for 7 days when he touched those things. It required a very special kind of purification, and it extended not only to those who had touched the dead, but even to the house or tent where the body had lain, and to all the open vessels therein. Anything that the unclean person touched, and anyone he touched, had to undergo the purification. So all of the disciples, John, especially John and James and Peter, were all unclean. Lazarus, his two sisters, were all unclean. All had to go through this purification. To enter the house, to come in contact with the grave, to partake of a feast for the dead, rendered you unclean for 7 days. Additionally, he was thus defiled in turn, rendered everything unclean which he touched. Let's do this. Do you understand? This, again, I have to go by my instinct. My instinct is that we're not understanding this. And the reason we're not understanding it is that you haven't personalized what it means to touch the dead body. And so I can talk forever about all this stuff and I'll just go, ch-ch-ch. Do you understand the evil, the intense sliminess of touching or going inward and thinking of yourself? Do you really?
Sure.
I think all of us can have been there at least once.
Yeah, like you're a couple of minutes every hour.
Get the Bible.
I would go out on a limb and say that this is like being drawn by the biggest wave yet. I mean, it's just that I don't think that we have any idea about the magnitude of this.
I know.
I think it's. I don't know. I just know. I mean, I feel it. I just feel it.
Go to Haggai.
I feel like we may not know the magnitude, but I feel like Crystal. I feel like we know when we do it.
All right. I really felt it real strong when we were. I've reflected on that a lot of times since that night. But I hadn't, and I know that resides in me too. And the intense, the hatred, the evil, just, you know, just scary as hell. And it's not something that I want to admit is me. But, and that's true.
Chapter 2, verse 4. Do you know what Zerubbabel means?
No.
What's it mean?
Seed of Babel. Offspring of Babel.
Zerubbabel.
Zerubbabel. Seed of Babel. Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, saith the Lord, and be strong, O Joshua, son of Josedech, the high priest. And be strong, all ye people of the land, saith the Lord, and work, for I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts. According to the word that I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, so my spirit remaineth among you, fear you not. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet once it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, and I will shake all nations. And the desire of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. And the glory of the latter house shall be greater than the former, saith the Lord of hosts. And in this place will I give you peace, will I give peace, saith the Lord of hosts. Let's take a break.